And I will be calling Jake to see if he's sleeping, is he dreaming? If he's dreaming, is he dreaming of me?
Hello, Mr. Skullhead.
Good evening. Good evening. Yeah, I think we're good.
Ooh, got some technical difficulties. Wouldn't be Monday without those, would it now?
No, at least it's not our fault this time. Apparently, MCRT kicked the plug out of his computer. Which, to be fair, I've done that before.
No. Is he literally incapable of plugging a plug into a plug?
Yeah, totally.
You've listened to those, haven't you? The Casper Hauser parodies of This American Life?
I don't think so.
It's pretty good. It's worth a couple minutes of your time. And you too, listeners. You know, Skype makes me feel bad all the time when I run it now, because it says, you've got $10 in Skype credit. You should call a friend. And I was like, I don't have any friends.
I don't have any. All of your friends are... Well, I wouldn't say all of your friends are nearby.
But all of my friends I would sooner text than call.
Yeah.
Because I like that impersonal touch. Now, you know, I bought $10 worth of Skype credit to ensure that I would never need to use it for anything.
Uh-huh.
If I hadn't had it, I would have found myself in need of it left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling in Europe, trying to do so without spending a fortune on ridiculous AT&T fees.
Yeah, especially then, data over there had to be kind of weird.
I got there and I was like, you know what? I'm in Europe. I don't need to talk to any of those American assholes. They're nowhere near as enlightened as the people in Europe.
And then everyone in Europe was just like, c'est la guerre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I want to talk about
Which is weird because I was in Germany.
Yeah.
And I said, don't you people realize that if it wasn't for me, you'd all be speaking some weird bastardization of French and German? Me specifically, because I'm not talking about World War II. I'm talking about this sort of, like, quantum crisis that I averted with my crazy time machine powers.
And it's a shame that the world will never celebrate you as a hero.
Yeah. I mean, in an effectively infinite number of parallel dimensions, I'm already being celebrated as a hero.
That's true.
I'd like to find a way to get to one of those parallel universes in which I have a harem filled with nubile young ladies. And, you know, in which it's okay. Because I'm not saying that I want a harem full of nubile young ladies unless the world exists such that I can get away with that and have it not be unethical.
I was going to say, I wonder if there are alternate universes where I don't have a harem of nubile young ladies.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the thought is just too horrible to contemplate.
Boggles the mind.
So, speaking of this, we've got a few people asking on the Twitter and et cetera what the plans are with the podcast. And I hadn't actually talked to you about the plans with the podcast, so let's do it right here in public for all the listeners. I was going to sort of relaunch it from our end and do the editing myself. And so that I don't have to go back and edit all 5 years of the archives, I thought we might try to just, like, start from an episode one. And then at the end of it, just tell people, like, hey, you know, if you want 5 more years of us that gets clumsier and more fraught with technical problems, the further back you go, go to the URL of the thing or whatever. But I kind of want to do like a little intro that tells who we are and try to structure it such that, like, prior to the break, we just talk about the general, like, bullshit that we normally talk about, and after the break, we focus on KOL and answer questions and try to get through as many questions as possible then. And the positioning of the break is obviously fluid, you know, because sometimes there aren't a lot of questions about what kind of pants we like to wear and things like that. You know, the stuff that the general public cares about. They don't care about our bullshit nerd video game shit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of our audience has never even heard of Kingdom of Loathing.
Yeah, no, that's my impression, at least. It's a thing where they're like, oh yeah, no, I played that stupid bullshit like 5 years ago. That's what they always say every time I tell people what I'm doing. I got to do that a lot, actually. I got to tell... You would think, for somebody with I would say that I have a fairly interesting career story. You know, it's at least, you know, something that people remark on when they hear about it. You'd think I'd have a patter down, but I just don't. I went to I screwed around and almost forgot. Luckily, I had my social secretary there to remind me, but I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go down to my mom's on Saturday and set up her new computer for her, my social secretary was like, didn't you have a wedding to go to out of town that day, which was tomorrow at that point? And I was like, oh yeah. And I had already been a dick and like RSVP'd really late, and not through the actual RSVP channels, but through text message to the groom saying, hey, is it too late to RSVP? And also I want beef. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I went to a wedding up in the old hometown, and that was pretty fun. Hung out with a bunch of people who when I was hanging out with them before the it seemed like a really startling and important age difference between us. But now that like I'm 34 and they're all like 32, it's a lot less of a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good amount of fun. Saw some people that I hadn't seen in a long time. It was a very everybody buying everybody drinks kind of crowd. So a lot of beers getting tossed around willy nilly, hither and yon. So you know how did you ever drink at Coyote Joe's?
Just once, I think. One night that I came back to Prescott, and when I was of drinking age, and I think I went there with you.
It's probably true. Yeah. So it was like, there's two colleges in the town that we grew up in, and one of them was, and there's probably more colleges than that. There's two, like, four-year schools. And one of them was full of, like, pilots, and one of them was full of hippies. Yeah. And so this was the bar that all the hippies would drink at. There were cowboy bars. A lot of cowboy bars, actually. But then there was this one hippie bar. And in the 10 years since I've been there, they expanded into this giant backyard area once you couldn't smoke in there anymore. And then they bought the building next to them and turned it into like a big sort of sitting area with a bunch of pool tables in it. And now they've bought the second floor above both of them and just opened an entirely additional bar above it. It seems like they could just keep filling up more and more space and people would come there to fill it to capacity no matter what they did. I think part of that is because from like, I don't know, midnight until 2 a.m. every day, it's just two for one, even on the weekends. They'll do a happy hour even on the weekends, which is the thing that I think that more bars should do.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like they're still making a profit if draft beers are half price. Right? Because you're going to get people in there, and even as a loss leader, like I feel like there's enough people coming in there with girls who are like, I don't like beer. Buy me 40 wine coolers. Because that's what they say. It's weird. You'd think after 40 wine coolers, say years or decades of drinking 40 wine coolers a night, their voices wouldn't be as sweet. Part of that is the naturally dulcet tones of my own voice,
but lending
a little
like
extra
rich
sweetness in the impression. But so yeah, lots of drinking, that's for sure, and lots of there was a delicious meal, and there were a lot of happy people. It was a good wedding. I guess I've never been to a bad wedding. Have you ever been to a bad wedding?
Huh.
Yeah. I guess your wedding kind of sucked.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. Your wedding was awesome.
I was trying to think there if your wedding was kind of lame.
Yeah, my wedding definitely sucked in the long view, if you consider its implications and consequences to be a part of it.
Just so it's clear, that was not where I was taking that.
Oh, well, I mean, that was where I was taking it.
I was making fun of you for not inviting your friends to your wedding.
Not eloping.
Yeah. Not
I was harkening back to the days when my mother was my only friend.
She was not your only friend. She was, to be fair, a little glowing friend.
Yeah. How was your weekend? Did you... I saw a sandwich with the child.
The pictures I upload on Google Buzz are always so old, though. Because they're... We, like, take pictures for a month before I can sit down and upload them all. So you're always a little bit behind on things that the child is doing. For example, he has a mustache now.
Cool.
And is starting a band.
Is it a mustache made out of scabs because he, like, fell down and ended up with a funny facial injury?
No, it's like a permanent milk mustache.
Oh.
You know, if
is it breast milk, at least?
You drink enough milk, it'll freeze that way. He hasn't been...
Oh, so, like, drink this milk. It'll put hair on your upper lip.
Exactly.
What do we do this weekend? And make your chest stiff.
We, like, slept half of the day on Saturday because Ollie was inclined to sleep half of the day, and we were really tired, too, so we just kind of caught up on the sleep. Went to somebody's 30th birthday party for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Did you give them a novelty coffin-shaped birthday card?
No, I figured that a bottle of whiskey would be more welcome as a gift.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of whiskey?
He's an Irish guy, so it was Jameson.
I see.
I saw that there were a couple of bourbons that actually looked like they might be good, but he's Irish, not Southern.
Right.
Or Midwestern.
Couldn't he be both?
It could be from South Ireland, but I don't know what you drink if you're from South Ireland.
Oh, so I the very last thing that I want is to reopen the argument from the last show that everyone was either bored by or angry about.
True.
But somebody asked, I forget who it was, actually. It was Psychosis730 who wrote in and said, "Can you guys explain what you mean when you say the Ket-She reflex? I hear it occasionally, and I honestly don't understand the term." So, in the Final Fantasy games, there is a character, like, I don't know exactly what this character is. It's like one of the Espers or whatever, Vespers, the Esters, in Final Fantasy III, the American Final Fantasy III, I don't know. Anyway, but the thing's name is C-A-I-T space S-I-T-H. And there is a certain kind of guy that if you say, "Oh yeah, that Kate Sith was my favorite Esper," they'll say, "It's pronounced Ket-She." It's like, so it's basically a way for people who are needlessly pedantic to make fun of people who are more needlessly pedantic.
Yeah.
You know, because we certainly grew up as like grammar correcting douche men.
Right.
Douchemen.
Johnny Deuce, yeah, and the Doucheman was
seeing,
a great group.
Seeing people like that made us realize, oh yeah, no, there is no reason to be a dick in that particular way. Like, that's the kind of knowledge that you should be ashamed of and should only come out in a highly specialized conversation. And you should never try and steer a conversation towards sharing that knowledge with somebody. I don't know if I believe you should be ashamed of that knowledge.
No, but I think, like, the Ket-She reflex is more a question of, like, tone and attitude than it is about having that piece of knowledge. Like, the guy who came at me with that said it in a way like, "Oh my god, how the fuck could you not know how to pronounce that?" And the answer, of course, is I read the English language, and that collection of letters really looks like it should say Kate Sith, maybe Ket Sith. But, you know, so it's like an obscure piece of information that you learn so that you can deliver it to people in an unbearably condescending tone. People that by all rights is okay for them to not know that. It's like if you were to just say, "You know, it's weird, that character with the Scottish accent and everything, I guess his name's Ket-She, is how you say that. How fucked up is that?" Is kind of different than, "Technically it's pronounced Ket-She because it uses the Celtic alphabet system."
Is it really a Celtic thing?
I think so.
Yeah, see, I feel like the people who are the most guilty of that are usually, like, people who are into Wicca or people who are, like, really into Japanese culture.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe that's because those things contain the most sort of American pop culture crossover that is likely to be mispronounced.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, "Oh yeah, that's a sweet Samhain shirt you're wearing." You know, I don't think you would tell somebody it's Samhain unless you knew them, yeah. Right? And you were like, you don't want them to embarrass themselves in front of the other death metal kids who all share this knowledge. Like, I had a buddy who insisted on correcting everybody when they pronounced the name of the, like, say, the ostensible main character of Street Fighter 2, and he would correct it to Dew,
yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, I say this, and as grammar curmudgeons, we are often, I think, you and I particularly, reluctant to admit when we're fighting a losing battle.
Fine.
But that one, you're not gonna, you know, I'm gonna call him Rue and not Ryu, because the first time I encountered that combination of letters, it was in the phrase Goju-ryu, And so that's how it was, like, knowing that that's how those letters are pronounced makes me say it like that. But I'm certainly not going to say, if somebody says Ryu, I'm not going to say, wait, who are you talking about? Do you mean Dew?
How do you feel about pronouncing place names with their proper pronunciation? I guess it's all about tone.
Yeah.
It's like the second.
So
most...
I will never. Like the, so the... we grew up with this, right? Because we grew up in a town that every right-thinking American who is not from there would say Prescott.
Right.
But it's named after a guy, and he pronounced his last name Prescott. And that's, you know, I guess that's a thing they teach you in school there, which I was not in. I didn't go to grade school there, so I didn't get that particular factoid hammered into my head all the time. I won't correct people, but I also won't mispronounce it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like I kind of, it's not a dick move if somebody was like, how long did you live in Prescott? And I'll say, like, you know, I was there for 10 years. And they're like, oh, what's your favorite place to eat? And I would say, the Prescott Brewing Company. You know, I would not go out of my way to say, oh, well, I lived in Prescott for 10 years. You know?
I lived in Prescott. I was thinking, like, the second most pretentious statement I've ever heard was somebody who was a pretty well-traveled dude. And I asked him if he had played Settlers of Catan. And he said, yeah, I picked it up in Bangladesh. And there was something about Bangladesh that it really gave it that kind of snooty monocle wearing, you know, oh, I picked that up in Bangladesh.
That was that same pronunciation appeared in the skit on the hit MC Frontalot album Zero Day. Mm-hmm. Sort of making fun of a upper class twit.
But do you think that's in the same ballpark?
So some of it I can, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I spent my first anniversary in Paris, you know.
But if you had lived
I'm only
going to
say Paris if I'm making fun of it, right?
But say you lived there for 2 years and everybody calls it that, and then you come back here, what do you do? It's like in London when I was asking somebody where the bathroom was. I knew they would understand me if I said loo, but then I would be that douche who was trying to talk British.
Mm-hmm.
But if I said, where's the bathroom or the restroom, a lot of times they wouldn't understand me.
Huh.
They'd say, what are you talking about? But I fixed it with toilets. I think we got mm-hmm.
it. Everything in Europe seems to be labeled WC, just everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the universal, which is weird, like an abbreviation of what I think of as a kind of obscure English word for an indoor toilet. It had become the sort of universal standard. But yeah, I mean, you know, there was that whole, that Saturday Night Live skit from back in the day when, like, Victoria Jackson and Phil Hartman were on there, where it was the, like, room full of newscasters who were very careful to pronounce all of the Spanish words properly.
Right.
You know, including English loanwords. You know, I'm not going to talk to somebody about going to Puerto Peñasco. You know, I'm going to, I need to know that that's what it's called so that I can follow the signs once I'm in Mexico.
Right.
But I'm just going to say Rocky Point if I'm talking to an American because that's what we call it, you know.
As long as you don't call it El Rocky Pointo, I think you're okay.
Yeah. Although, you know, sometimes it doesn't, like Tijuana. Tijuana's basically the same, I guess, right?
There's no ocean, though.
No, I'm saying Tijuana is pronounced the same in English and in Spanish.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's more
it's
like,
not like, you know, or I'm going to move to Los Angeles.
Right. It's more like Tijuana.
Tijuana?
Tijuana.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But you're a dick if you're an American guy and you say that. If you're an Englishman, you'd call it Tijuana.
The British have an intense hatred for Spanish pronunciation, I think. It would probably come out Tijuana.
I think that the British have an intense hatred for English pronunciation, too. Witness Worcestershire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's the one? Beecham? Although that's French, I guess.
Yeah, I was confused when they kept talking about
there was an example
that
my dad had of that I don't remember what it was. But, yeah. And that's a good story, huh?
Gloucester, Leicester, and Worcestershire were pretty confusing to me. Like, people telling us in London to meet us, to meet them at Leicester Square.
Mm-hmm.
Where the hell is Leicester Square? And they're like, oh, it's that one. Like, oh, Leicester Square. Gotcha. Yeah, the British thing with, like, they won't say the syllable a, or the vowel sound a, kind of refuse to, except for in tacos and nachos. And seriously, like, I've heard a British person say, you know, no, we, that sound just doesn't exist in the King's English, and then we're going to go around and get some tacos. You've picked just exactly the wrong time to incorporate that sound into your lexicon. Lexican. Are you a lexican or a lexicant?
Yeah. So, Xdanstick asks an interesting desert island question. If you were forced to choose to spend the rest of your life without either movies or music, what would you pick and why? I would go without movies, I think.
Yeah, I would too. Why would you say that?
Oh, because there will frequently be weeks where I don't watch any movies, but there's never a day where I don't experience music in one way or another.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, I would be fine if I could only watch television episodes. Or, you know, then I could watch nothing over 30 minutes long, but there's nothing that can substitute for music in my mind.
And I mean, it's also just in terms of, like, you know, I don't know that this is true, just with the whole rapid pace increase of everything, but I feel like there is so much more music as a sort of relic of human culture than there is movies, because there's been music for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that we remember a lot of it. I wonder how much music is actually gone, and how much of it, like, just simple melodies or whatever, have just been forgotten and then identically recreated a number of times. Because there's really only, like, the music, the math works out to resolve into some relatively straightforward rules that are going to have relatively straightforward consequences when you apply them, right?
If you're talking about what sounds pleasant to, like, a Western ear, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there are, I think, some rules that apply even across cultures. I think. I mean, like, I feel like a build-up and then release of tension is always, it's the kind of thing that is not limited to Western music. Although, I don't know. You know, I can't say anything about, say, Indian music, because it's all noise.
Yeah, when I was in Bangladesh, I didn't listen to any of that.
Any of the Bangladeshi music?
When I was in Mumbai.
Do you think saying Mumbai is pretentious?
That's the one that I'm kind of on the fence on, you know?
Huh.
When you
I feel like I've mostly heard it said Mumbai.
Like,
you know, like a subtle pronunciation difference, whatever. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, we totally went to Prana or Praha or how, whatever the local word for Prague is.
That's what I was thinking. When it's a different word entirely.
Yeah,
saying, yeah,
yeah, we spent some time in Deutschland this summer.
I spent some time in Doucheland.
Yeah. That's showerland, if you're a German. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're Deutsch.
The Deutsch douche.
I was incredibly confused when somebody asked me in German if I was German, and it was because the guy, I think, knew that I wasn't,
mm-hmm.
that he asked, because he was from Australia, and English was his native language. So that the confused look on my face led him to say, American, then? Yes. No, wait, it was the fact that I said, what?
Quit talking funny.
Yeah.
That was a fun moment that we had in one of the first times I went to Moscow with my parents. My mom was trying to get somebody out on the street to take a picture of the family, and she was asking in kind of broken Russian, and they were replying in kind of broken Russian, until we finally figured out that they were from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who, but it took a couple of minutes for somebody to finally go, hey, you probably speak English as a first language, huh? Like, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Hold my camera, and please don't steal it.
Well, you know, you can always trust the white folks.
That just made me think of, we're painting our house, so I've been looking at a lot of those little, like, cards with different colors of paint on them. You know, like different shades of a color. And I thought you should have a card like that for travel with different shades of skin tone and the degree to which you could trust them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For some reason, what you said just then made me think that that's a product whose time has come.
Do those cards do anything?
Do they do anything?
Yeah. Like, whenever I look at those, I think it's a thing, like, certain things, like, I feel like when you are, say, in a computer store, it is impossible for you to objectively gauge the size of a monitor that you're looking at.
Right.
Right? Because, like, it will either look, you know, like a laptop next to a bunch of other laptops. Like, I don't feel like it's possible for you to, like, actually imagine what it's going to look like when you're in a normal-sized room with the thing sitting in your lap. And those color swatches, like, I don't know that I believe that we are capable of looking at a thing and then imagining a room that is that color and actually understanding what a room that color is going to look like.
Try thinking about that, but instead of a room, it's the entire outside of your house.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's a kind of a funnel effect where you start out with a general, like, we want to do something in green. So you go to the giant green section, and you narrow it down to, like, three cards that have all different greens on them. And you eliminate them down to a couple of cards, and then a couple of colors on those cards. And then you get... Now you can get little, like, 8-ounce tester things for, like, $3. So okay. they actually mix up a little bit of the color. And so then we came home and painted those on the wall of the house. And kind of sat there and tried to picture what the whole house is going to look wrapped in it. And I don't know, like, we settled on a couple of colors, but I still can't really get my head around seeing an entire, like, my entire field of vision full of that color.
So I mean, I guess in general, unless you do something ridiculous, it kind of doesn't matter what color your house is.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't want to make it... I don't want to have, like, a beige house, I guess. But I also don't want to have the house that makes everyone on the block pissed off at you, you know?
Right. You think you could get away with purple in your neighborhood?
There's a purple house a couple of blocks up. I think it's going to be green, and then the kind of accent gables on the front are going to be orange.
It's kind like of a light green. You're torn as an adult in this situation, right? Because it's like you don't want to be, I don't know, like the girl with all the facial piercings, but you also need to be able to tell people, oh, it's the X house, so that they can get to a party.
Right, I'm not trying to, like, make my house look interesting instead of developing a personality, because it's way too late for me to develop a personality anyway.
Sure.
But
you don't, I mean, you don't want to get too quirky with something that you're inflicting on the public.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because it's just kind of like, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the girl with all the facial piercings, but, like, you know, one thing that is wrong with that is other people's perception of her, if they're not, you know, sort of like-minded nonconformists. And, like, you know, maybe that's what you're going for. But, like, I feel like doing anything weird with your house is just a good way to get people, like, you know, that's it. I'm calling the city every chance I get to complain about what these assholes are doing because I don't like the crazy color that their house is.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of weird, though, that, like, coming from the condo where they had the very strict HOA, to really the only limitation on what color you paint your house is how sensitive you are to the hatred of others. Because presumably we could paint the whole house bright pink. If we didn't care if people hated us. And there's got to be a couple of people out there.
I've seen pink houses that were not terrible. Right? I mean,
because, like, ain't that America?
I feel like any pastel is pretty inoffensive.
I was thinking, like, neon. Like bright fuck-off pink.
Okay, yeah, I guess.
I mean, little pink houses are okay.
Mm-hmm. For you and me.
Mm-hmm. That's America.
And, yeah, you know, you could try and make it a perfect blue building.
Uh-huh.
You know, you could get a white house with black curtains.
You have a white room, maybe.
Just a single room in a house, yeah.
You just rebuild the whole thing in brick.
You could just you could hot glue bricks to the outside of the house.
That's a thing. People like, not hot glue, but you just kind of put up a brick facade, which to me seems like just building another larger house around your house, and that seems like a lot of work.
In my house is fake bricks on the outside of stucco.
Huh.
It looks like a brick house, you know, that like the front of it, it looks like a cool looking brick house, but like they, in the back, they stopped like maybe 4 feet up.
Let me just say, shake it down, shake it down, shake it down now.
Hey, that's a joke I don't get.
She is a brick house.
Oh, okay. So the Judo Madonna also asked an interesting question. So nuclear holocaust is imminent and you're packing a fallout shelter of culture for future generations. You can only do one item for humor, be it TV series, movie, book series, etc. What do you pack, Hotshot? What do you pack? I thought about that a little bit.
Hmm.
It's very tempting to say the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, even though I don't think that it is the greatest thing, but I think it was pretty fundamental to the development of the sort of current culture of humor, which I, as a you know, card-carrying member of modern pop culture, believe is pretty awesome. But I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe you're supposed to go with, like, the greatest amount of content, so you'd have to, I don't know, The Simpsons?
Hmm.
Like, as an entire TV series, although I don't know that The Simpsons, outside the context of the larger culture, would be at all interesting.
Right.
I mean, well, I don't think that it would be comprehensible, right? I mean, I think it might just be frustrating, because it's like, oh, that was clearly, you know, say a well-informed but completely alien viewer would think, oh, well, that was clearly just a reference to something that not only do I not understand, but there is no way to ever understand it.
Right. I was thinking either that or either Hitchhiker's Guide, well, either the first four Hitchhiker's Guide books or the Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Huh. I mean, I guess it is, since that movie is so old, we are almost seeing it free of the context of anything else that was going on at the time.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of pop culture in there, I don't think. And it, I think, and I'm sure somebody will prove me wrong, that when it came out, there wasn't really anything quite like it. The kind of mixing of genres and varying widely in tone and going from like animation to regular, and then the kind of weird meta ending with the documentary crew, and yeah, I don't know.
There was the Kentucky Fried movie. I mean, I feel like that was
has
a
boobs in it too.
Yeah, it does. Did the original release of Holy Grail not have any boobs in it?
Not as far as I can remember.
There was nothing in Castle Anthrax that might have been cut to protect our sensitive young eyes.
I don't think so. It was a while before I watched Holy Grail, because it had the, like, God appearing in the sky thing. That
ooh, so your parents were anti that?
Had they seen it, they would have been offended by it, and I think whoever showed it to me knew that, and so waited until they weren't around.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a terrifying thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I feel like you could do now, this is a problem kind of with, so you'd pick something, but then what you would also hope would fit in that fallout shelter was, you know, like a few petabytes of data with every, like the entire contents of BitTorrent.
Right.
You know, like just so that, And you know, you try to make it so somebody can access that data, but you put it in there just in case, right? Like, you don't assume that they will be able to access it, but you put it in there along with a machine that can read it, and maybe, you know, how do you fucking power it, though, is another problem, right?
Fusion.
Maybe you could build a computer that was just a cube with a crank. And when you turn the crank, it's got some device for figuring out what language the person turning the crank speaks, and then displaying a message that says, turn the crank some more. And then they keep turning the crank, and it slowly teaches them how to build a power grid. Now plug this in. And then it exudes a keyboard, and Mavis Beacon teaches typing. Because they won't know who Mario is.
I was thinking...
Mavis Beacon is, no matter how post-apocalyptic the society.
I mean, Beacon is right in her name.
Yeah.
She can be a beacon of hope down through the ages.
Beacon of hope. The thing from Uranus wrote, speaking of a slightly different but equally nerdy thing to talk about, hey, I just found out that Wizards is finally re-releasing Betrayal at House on the Hill. I'm super excited. Maybe I can finally afford a copy. Yeah, and then he links to Amazon, the Amazon page for Betrayal at House on the Hill, which comes out in a couple months. Pretty awesome board game. How many? You only played that with us a couple times, right?
I think just the ones, actually.
So it is a lot less like a sort of, I mean, it is especially not like a modern kind of Euro sensibility board game where it's, you know, very carefully balanced gameplay and stuff. It is a lot more akin to like really light tabletop role playing. You got a bunch of characters, and then you sort of build the map of this haunted house as you explore it, and there's a built-in mechanism for sort of bringing the game to an end in one of dozens of possible scenarios in which one person becomes the sort of antagonist to the rest of the people who are playing. So it's a game where you're being cooperative up until the end, and then you're all fighting against a dude. And it's pretty ridiculously unbalanced. Like, somebody usually dies, and often the team of good guys in the end will just immediately win without having to interact with the bad guy at all. You know, the extreme randomization of the board being created as you play is, you know, it's very clever, some of the things that they've done to try to minimize that, but it doesn't always work because there are just, the possibility space is way too large. But yeah, it's got a lot of cards with a lot of spooky stories on them, so you get to talk in the spooky voice, and everybody likes that.
It struck me as pretty similar to Arkham Horror, without some of the tedious die rolling.
Yeah, it's less mathy than Arkham Horror. It's less sort of prescribed. I feel like Arkham Horror does an excellent job of being like a computer game as a board game, but it's just, you know, what it doesn't have is like a database backend the way a computer game would, and so there's like too many piles of little cards. That's my primary complaint. Like, there are a lot of things that are decks of cards that should be like lookup tables in a book. And I feel like they did that for the sake of accessibility, because somebody who, you know, it's, say, more akin to Monopoly than that it is Dungeons and Dragons to a certain extent, I guess. And the more you have, like, lookup tables of things in books, the more Dungeons and Dragons-y you're getting.
Right.
But I think it also makes it less accessible, because people will look at the table before anything has even happened and get intimidated and say, I'm not smart enough to play this.
I think, though, when you have, like, forget how many locations in the game. So, say you have, like, 15 places that you can go, and each of them have 20 different encounters you can have there. That instead of, like, go to the laboratory table and roll 2d20, you just have a deck of cards that has three of the locations. And adventures, you know, a deck of 25 cards for each three locations.
So yeah, but I feel like that frustrates me, because it's like, all right, so turn this over and then look at the top third of it.
Uh-huh. That hasn't bothered me about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts that there are that many cards, and it's still not enough cards for each of the cards to not be doing, like, three different things, you know? I don't know. What I should do is I should just play it when I don't have to be responsible for doing that, right? I should play it at somebody else's house.
You should only ever play it when I'm there to be the DM.
Yeah, and if you don't mind that, then rock it.
Dude, if I had played it for the first time, like opening a box new with just me and a bunch of people who'd never played it, I don't think I would have played it twice.
Yeah, I have not. I didn't even actually finish it the first time, because it went on for a long, long time, and then a bunch of people fell asleep. I think it was because of the poison gas that came out of the Elder God.
We did play it at Gen Con, weren't you there?
We did play it at Gen Con. Yes, I was, and I enjoyed it. Maybe I'll come visit you, and we'll play it again.
That would be pretty awesome. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be like a little schoolgirl going on a first date when I know you're coming to my house.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to be all, Jake's coming to visit, got to clean up stuff.
You'll be excited.
Make Jake comfortable.
Do you have a room for me to sleep in?
We have your choice of two rooms for you to sleep in.
Did I lose you?
I don't think so.
Hey.
No, we're still on. Something's wrong with you.
Cool. No? Do you have a room that I can sleep in?
Oh, now both streams just dropped. Nice. We restarted them. Okay. I don't know.
Sweet. Why are your internets broken all the damn time?
And we just had a guy come from Comcast and rerun the cable from the big line outside to a brand new cable box, and in a single cable that goes straight into our modem, which is connected via a big long Cat5 cable to my computer. So there's no reason that should happen. Sorry about that, guys.
What's weird is that with the exception of me not ever getting an answer to the question of whether you have a room for me to sleep in, because I just didn't hear anything, the sound quality on Skype is really good, which you would think that if your internet was shitty that it wouldn't be.
It's really fast. It just, I don't know what the disconnecting every 45 minutes,
you don't know what the disconnect is?
Yeah, I feel kind of a disconnect there. But yeah, we have you can have the entire top floor of our house. There's a little room,
and a
big room.
Does it have a beaten off room?
And a bathroom. Well, you could sleep in the big room, jack off in the little room, and shower in the bathroom. You could jack off in the shower if you wanted to.
Oh, it's that kind of shower, is it?
It's a jacking off shower. What would a jacking off shower like?
One of those transparent vinyl shower curtains, but with maybe naked ladies on it instead of seashells.
There's one wall of the shower is just a huge LCD screen that plays porn at life size.
Oh wow! Wait, I don't know. Given the kind of porn that you would probably select to put in the jacking off shower, I don't know that I'd want to. I don't know that I'd want to try that.
Oh, it's okay, because that's Ollie's bathroom too. So he.
You're trying to make him into a normal person.
Yeah, best as I can.
So you're not gonna share your own predilections with him.
Right.
You're gonna hide from him as much as you can.
I'm gonna say you watch porn that has girls in it.
Are you one of those families that is insistent that the human body is a beautiful thing and you should be naked around your kids all the goddamn time?
That's decidedly creepy, actually. Okay. At the age that he is, sometimes we'll he didn't get a bath last night, so I'll start off the shower with him and then I'll hand him off to the wife when she gets in the shower, and then I'll dry off and he'll dry off.
Oh, right. I did forget that you're one of those creepy families who take showers together.
But then when he gets just a little bit older, that's going to stop, because that's just kind of weird. You know? It's like breastfeeding a kid till they're 3 years old.
I mean, your parents were hyper-conservative. Like, mine, I feel like we're somewhere on the spectrum of normalcy. Like, it wouldn't be like, you know, if my dad was in the shower and I was in the bedroom with my mom when I was, like, say, you know, 5 or 6 years old, like, my dad would not come out of the bathroom, say, get out of here so that I can put on my pants, you know? It wasn't like that, but it was also not like, come in here and take a shower with me, little boy.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much how my upbringing was. It wasn't like my parents would have performed an exorcism if I had seen my dad changing clothes or something. But the whole like
they got tired. They got tired of all the exorcisms that they had to perform because they would catch you beating off. They'd say it must be a demon. It must be a demon in his head.
And it must be a semen demon.
I wonder if that pun has ever been made. I mean, it's not a pun, I guess. It's a rhyme. I wonder if that rhyme has ever been made before.
I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers have a song that one of the lyrics is, I got a devil in my dick and demons in my semen. And then the rest of the song is probably about California. Yeah.
Okay. Because that sounded like a joke about the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then it turned into a joke about the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. Let me see if I can... Sir Psycho Sexy by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Standing there with my heart on bleeding, there's a devil in my dick and some demons in my semen. Good God, no, that would be treason.
What?
California is awesome. I'm pretty sure that's how the chorus to that goes.
I would be surprised if there wasn't at least an oblique reference to California. So, I mean, do you suppose that's about him having come down with a social disease?
I guess.
Why would his heart on be bleeding? And what's he considering doing with it that would be a treason? Or does he consider his hard-on to be a part of himself? Anything that he did that was not in his hard-on's interest would then not be in his own interest. Which is a sensible position.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps it was not a sensible position that led him to have the bleeding erection.
Erection? Are you British now?
Did I say erection?
You said erection. Is that like a fraction of an erection?
No, it's when you are in Iraq. I mean, Iraq, and you get a boner because somebody walks over a steam vent and their burqa flies up.
Right, that's better than my joke that all you ever get is a fraction of an erection.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's a whole erection. It's just really, really small.
Go ahead and. Kids, go ahead and Google the lyrics to Sir Psycho Sexy from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I remember vaguely hearing the lyrics to this under my big sister's door, because she would always listen to the music that we weren't supposed to have, and being kind of shocked and appalled. And now, you know, I'm cool, man of the world, I listen to anything I want, and I'm still kind of shocked and appalled. This is it's pretty overt. It's kind of Two Life Crew-ish. You don't expect that from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Really? You don't expect Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics to be overtly sexual in a way that's kind of creepy?
Well, not in the, like, in your arms and your legs and your pussy I'd kill. I said, what's up now, suck my dick like a ram getting ready to jam the lamb. Like, I understand the, like, I like pleasure spiked with pain and music is my aeroplane, sure, but...
That was after they all got old, though.
That's true. I wonder if they ever...
You know, seeing these lyrics, though, I can understand why, like, most of the right-thinking people that I've known think of the Red Hot Chili Peppers as something that you, like, maybe you're into in high school.
Uh-huh.
But then you grow out of it. And I feel like only encountering the Red Hot Chili Peppers blood sugar sex magic on, I didn't exactly get that. So I'm like, you know, why... Like, I don't think of, like, oh, yeah, you too. That's something that you'd be into when you're a kid, but then grow out of it. You know, like, I'm not exactly comparing Red Hot Chili Peppers to U2, but, like, they're kind of in the same ballpark.
Yeah, to me, they're both kind of... A whole lot of people are really fanatical about them, and I have no idea why. Yeah. Like, a song or two I'm really fond of, and, you know, like, out of the entire U2 catalog, I could pull maybe 4 songs that I want to hear, and those I'd want to hear like over and over, but there's a lot of noise in that signal, and I feel about Chili Peppers kind of the same way. I think with Chili Peppers you really only need Give It Away and Under the Bridge, because then you have the fast song and the slow song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. Although, yeah, no, I was going to say, neither of them is really, really explicitly about California, but no, it totally is. Like, Under the Bridge just starts out being about Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Los
Angeles. Although I have to say, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the funk will make me freak. If I should die before I waked, allow me, Lord, to rock out naked.
yeah, I'll give him that one.
It's, you know, the if I should die before I waked is like, that's kind of slant, because, you know, it doesn't make sense. But, you know, it's okay. In the service of rhyming with naked, it's okay. Yeah, I don't know.
He could do, like, if I should die while totally baked.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting? I feel like there's a whole generation of children who are going to think that the last line of every song is download title of this song to your cell phone. I was playing some song that I had downloaded a guitar tab for and accidentally included in the printout of the tab the download whatever to your cell phone. So then I would always tack that on as an extra verse at the end. But, that was me being adorable. Let's see. Ozzy wrote, having a lot of fun playing Words with Friends with you. It's been challenging in a way that I appreciate. Yeah, I've still been playing a lot of Words with Friends. A couple of months, and I'm still doing that every day. It's fun to play Scrabble, and it's fun to play Scrabble with strangers on the internet, or you know, with Ozu, in Ozu's case, new acquaintances. Game after game with Cirrus, where we are more concerned with the words being naughty than we are being high scoring words.
I tried to play actual Scrabble that way once, and it got really silly really quickly. Because the letter U is kind of vital for a lot of the words we wanted to use, and you run out of them real quick.
Yeah, if you can't get sex in there anywhere, there's nothing to do with the X. And if you can't get, like, jism or jerk, there's nothing to do with the J's.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, we also allow booze and drug references. Mm-hmm. So
So just a general vice theme?
Yeah. But mostly sex. I mean, it just started out with him starting a game with farts. You know, so then how do you follow that up? Although I would say that we probably shuffle out tiles every other turn because there's just nothing naughty to play. Or the worst thing is when you have, you know, say buggery and nowhere to play it.
As in life.
Yeah. I mean, I have so much buggery to give. And no one to give it to. Why are, you know, I can understand, I don't want to start another argument like this, but you posted that thing to your Twitter about Todd Solondz being like a bad person because he made a movie that you didn't like. Like, why do you think he's a bad person?
It's not so much that he made a movie I didn't like, it's that he made a movie that I abhor. I don't know. There is so much contempt for both the characters and the audience in that movie that I found it kind of hard to swallow, combined with the fact that I don't think on a base level it's very well, like, plotted or cut together or written.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if there had been, like, some amazing dialogue in it or something, then I could at least say, well, this guy's outlook on life is kind of the opposite of mine, but you know, at least he can sure write these miserable characters jacking off and gluing postcards to the wall with their semen.
Would you fuck me, Dad? No, son. I'd jerk off instead. You don't think that's amazing dialogue?
Well, it's no Hold Me Like You Did on the Lake by Naboo. But,
yeah.
It's up there.
Or, you know, the perennial favorite, I Came.
Yeah. See, the thing is, not only did I hate the fuck out of that movie, having, like, paid money to rent it and watch it back in the day, but then I had to sit through one of my wife's college classes, because I had come up for the weekend and she had an evening class, and they were showing that movie in the class, so I've seen the movie twice now, and it's the least favorite movie I think I've ever seen.
It's weird. I kind of like it when you hate something and I am totally indifferent to it, because it allows me to really experience your hatred of it without, like, you know, without it turning into, like, an argument about the validity right. of something. I do question, like, I don't know. There's probably some piece of work that is so bad that I, like, feel contempt for the people who made it. But I don't know, you know. I mean, I kind of hate the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but I assume, like, Flea is a cool guy.
Right.
Anthony Kiedis is probably cool. Who's that other guy who was in all those other bands?
John Frusciante?
Yeah. I don't know anything about him.
I think with Todd Solondz, it's more that he keeps making that movie, just kind of miserable people doing horrible things while saying stupid dialogue, and he keeps just getting his dick sucked by the critical block. And I don't know, movie criticism is interesting to me, and it's just weird to see people not picking up on the fact that he just fucking can't write. So that, that like, God, I hate this movie. And then, you know, oh, he made another movie. I wonder what that's like. Okay. And then just have to have people praise it because it's kind of so repulsive that it must be art, I guess.
Did you see Welcome to the Dollhouse?
No, because I saw Happiness first.
It, I mean, I saw Happiness first, too. I did not actually know that they were by the same guy. Like, I feel like I watched a lot of movies before I thought of movies as a thing that, like, a person did. Uh-huh. Like, before I thought of movies as a thing that were, like, in a portfolio of a given auteur, I guess.
Right.
And I wonder, I mean, you know, it never would have occurred to me to feel that way about music, but I guess, like, when you are made aware of music, and I know that when you're made aware of a movie, that usually the director's name is right there, but, like, when somebody else tells you about it, they don't say that unless they're somebody who really cares about movies.
Yeah, it's kind of like my mom growing up in the 60s with a transistor radio. She knows all of these songs and that she loves, but she doesn't know who any of the artists are.
Right.
So it's kind of surprising.
Or maybe that two of the songs that she likes were written by the same guy and performed by the same band, even.
Right.
Unless it's a band with a really specific sound. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, and maybe it is just my sort of rural upbringing coming to bear on my experience of this, but I guess I would say that the average American does not know that Fargo and The Big Lebowski were made by the same people.
Oh.
Like, the average American who has seen both of those movies does not know that they were both made by the same guys.
And would then go on and seek out, like, Barton Fink and Raising Arizona and Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I could be wrong about that, right? Because to me, it seems like that seems like the kind of statement that I would make in, you know, the kind of parties I go to now, and people would be like, no, what are you talking about? Everybody cares about stuff like that. Everybody knows stuff like that. And it's weird for me to look back and think that I just paid zero attention to that whole aspect of movies, like who was involved in them. I mean, apart from like the actors, right? I mean, yeah. Like, you know, I feel like I didn't know growing up that George Lucas was involved in Indiana Jones. And, you know, it's like, maybe I don't know. I can't think that I would have liked it more. I had this vague sense from watching something about Labyrinth that was done by the guy who made the Muppets. But, yeah, I don't know. So I saw Welcome to the Dollhouse, you know, without knowing that it was by the same guy that Happiness. Like, because I feel like when I started watching, like, serious movies in high school, when I met the, you know, the sort of, like, people who were actually interested in culture. And then you introduced me to, say, Rocky Horror, and did you show me Monty Python and the Holy Grail for the first time, or was that my dad?
That was probably your dad.
I always get you and my dad mixed up on account of all the banging my mom that happened when I first met both of you. I guess. Welcome to the Dollhouse, as I recall, was not nearly as grim as Happiness, but it was still pretty grim.
There was just an unfortunate couple of days, I think, in college where we rented Jawbreaker, Very Bad Things, Happiness, and Drop Dead Gorgeous. And all four of those are just reprehensible people doing reprehensible things for no particular reason. And just really contemptuous of their characters, even. Like, I don't mind watching bad people do bad things if the movie fucking cares about them. But when it's just, like, look at these freaks doing freaky things. Like, Drop Dead Gorgeous, we stopped watching because there was a scene where there's a girl who's anorexic and her hair is falling out, and they were playing that for laughs. Just like, yeah. So watching all four of those movies back to back was just like, God damn it. Am I ever going to see a good movie again?
I've only seen Happiness and Very Bad Things. Very Bad Things, like, there are scenes in that stick with me. You know, like, I can't see a fucking coat hook on the wall of a hotel without thinking about that hooker getting killed. That was like the last thing Christian Slater was in.
Right. Killing a hooker for laughs. I don't know. I could see the body of a hooker being used for laughs, but just like the funny death of, at least make her a main character and then kill her for laughs. Like, Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and take our break?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, we're back.
Cool. How was your break?
It was good. We I saw my son. I put pajamas on him. I talked to my wife.
Did they have yodas and shit on them?
No, he's sleeping and he's kind of sleeping James Dean style. He's got like a plain white onesie going on. Because it's hotter than fuck here at the moment. And even with the couple of window units in the house, it's only slightly less hot than fuck.
Does he subscribe to the Live Fast, Die Young, and Leave a Tiny Corpse?
I don't think so. I'm not sure if James Dean left a tiny corpse. He left a bisexual corpse.
Oh, yeah? Is that a thing?
Somebody asked him about his sexuality, and he said, well, I don't believe in going through life with one hand tied behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. James Dean.
You don't think that means he was just, like, banging chicks two at once?
With both hands.
Yeah. Well, no, three at once, right? He was banging one and finger-banging her two sisters.
Right. Nobody ever calls oral sex tongue-banging, and they really should.
Yeah. Well, we can take some KOL questions.
We should.
This segment of the show. Marina asks, what weapon in KOL is the best? The one that crushes your enemies, the one that sees them driven before you, and the one that hears the lamentations of the women are tied for.
Yeah, we should make that suite of weapons. Although, I don't know if the lamentations of the women might get us in trouble.
Really?
Do you think that's more of like a husband-killing weapon, or like a rape machine?
Yeah, you know, like a widowmaker.
A widowmaker, right?
I don't think it's a rape machine. I don't even think there's any such thing as a rape machine.
I dare you to Google image search rape machine.
I don't want to. There probably won't be any porn. It won't be like I believe the children are the future.
And I don't want to search for that either, but I dare you to.
Yeah. Swashbucklar says, hello, would it be possible to have an outfit made from the Game Grid game's 1,000-point completion reward pieces? I realize how absurd the resulting costume would look, but it may prove fun. No, that was the plan, actually, but we didn't want to do it until we had gotten all of the games done, because we didn't want to strand people. We didn't want to, like, put in an outfit that you could complete, but we also didn't want to make it so we uncompleted outfits for people by adding more content. So, I'm guessing that in some idle moments somewhere we're gonna do something with Jackass Plumber.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even if it just gets written as another like sort of choose your own adventure kind of thing, you know, which is like effectively what Dungeon Fist was.
Hey, maybe I should. I know how to use a spindler now that I could create something like that in.
Yeah, you totally could. We've written this whole. I'm happy to see you using that and feeling comfortable with it, because that the goal, and you know the reason this didn't happen is because it took me a long time to conceive of something that was like straightforward for a non-programmer.
Yeah.
And you're nothing if not a non-programmer. I mean, you aren't nothing except for not a non-programmer.
I ain't not nothing with the. Yeah, and I was actually glad that my second the Choose Your Own Adventure that I was converting had those complications in it, where I had conceived it almost as if I was working with something that could save a state.
Right.
And actually two states, it turns out. And it was so much easier to get the whole thing done that way than trying to make it work on paper. It left me pretty enthusiastic about the possibilities.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad, because it's, I think that It is entirely possible that within a year there will be a bucket by the end of this year there will be a bucket that we can like throw labor at and maybe get a little bit of money out of. At the very least, you know, another place for us to put cool stuff in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neat. Happy about that. I don't know how Riff's doing on his. His sleep schedule has started to overlap my work schedule entirely, so I only see him on the radio shows.
People in Dev were clicking around on his.
Oh, yeah?
And a couple of days ago, and I just figured that meant he was finished and that I needed to get on the ball and finish mine.
Oh,
so
okay.
Even if he wasn't, then that served a purpose.
Oh, no, you accidentally worked too hard. So I've got this will get the player base griping at you to finish something. One of the things that I've got Scully doing is some writing for I don't even know if I want to talk about this. I have this goal, and that the goal I'm stating this goal, which is to remove one instance of the delay function per week until it is gone. And I mean, because of the way that it's distributed, what that's going to be like, you know, in this case, is say removing delay from the Friars, and then that gives me 3 weeks to remove to get back up my average. There are multiple ones that have to be pulled out at the same time, basically, for it to make any sense. And the schema that we decided on for the way that the new pre-quest Friars is going to work is pretty straightforward, and I hope that it solves all of everybody's problems all at once without actually speeding that up more than I want it to. I think it probably becomes something that the speed people will be happier with than the existing situation. Although, probably not. What do I know? Every decision that I make pisses somebody off.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's kind of nice because it gives me an opportunity to revisit in a kind of simple way some of the stuff that we've been working on. Also, I was excited about the first of your ideas for the post gate replacement quest.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I have two other ideas that are equally as good, and then we can.
Cool.
Hopefully.
Yeah, maybe if you have trouble, maybe we can like shoot the shit for a while and see if between us we can come up with something if it was trickier. But one of these days, we'll probably finish the outfit for the game grid, which is what this question was about. So. Pantalaimon says, could you please, please, please upload the Monday shows? I like them even more than the Thursday shows, although it's close, and I haven't heard Scully for too long, European time zone and all. The radio schedule was pretty erratic for the last couple of months. I think all of the Monday shows that exist are in the archive now. And if a show is missing, it is because there was no show that Monday.
Yeah.
With the exception of a week... In about a week. I guess this backpacking trip has been altered such that I won't miss any Monday shows.
Nice.
I won't miss a single Thursday show, but I feel like I'm at the office enough these days with everybody there at once that we can pre-record one pretty easily. It's trickier for you and I to pre-record for a Monday when one of us isn't going to be around because it involves finding something that reliably will record Skype conversations, and it's like...
Right.
You know, as much as I hate to think this, I feel like this is the kind of thing that if I were using a Mac, it would just work.
Huh.
I feel like there is some program, and I think it might be GarageBand, that if I had a Mac with a microphone plugged in and I Skyped you and we had a conversation and I just hit the record button on GarageBand, it would do exactly what you would think it would do and just record both of those sounds. I'm not positive that that's the case. But yeah, I don't know, man. I wish the Mac that I bought 5 years ago wasn't such a piece of shit. A cat and an ex conspired to just destroy the shit out of that laptop, and it was never the same after being fixed. If we wanted to pre-record a show where it sounded like there was that one of us was in the shower, or that both of us were in the shower together.
Hi.
Hello.
We could totally do that. Maybe yeah. when I'm at your house, we can record a show in the shower together.
Would you want Ollie to be in the shower with us or not?
No, because that's creepy.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to say, anybody who's not either of his parents being in the shower with him, not okay.
Really?
You know, like if I left him with a babysitter and came back and she's like, yeah, we took a bath together.
Well, except like, for the one time we took a bath with Abby and
Mitch. Well, that's hot and all, but that shit's not going to fly for much longer.
Arkwild writes that Bum Cheek City is cool. I don't know about that. I mean, well, I'm not saying I don't know about that. Like, I'm saying that he's not. Every time I see Bum Cheek City, I think of the Prince song, Erotic City.
I was thinking of Suffragette City.
Oh, yeah?
Don't lean on me, man, because you can't afford the ticket back to Bum Cheek City.
Hmm.
It's all right. It's out of sight.
Yeah. I like Bum Cheek City's forum avatar. So you think of Bum Cheek as being related to suffragettes, and I think of Bum Cheek as erotic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's ironic because I'm not in reality an ass man.
It depends on whether or not you have a comma in there.
Ass man. Oh, a comma. Josh the Sorcerer Man says, question, what does the internet have for breakfast? Answer, a rolled oatse. No, I'm sorry, rolled oatse. Is rolled oats a thing?
Apparently.
Yes.
I've heard it, but I don't think that's a thing that Americans... Maybe what does the English internet have for breakfast?
I would have gone for honey bunches of oats.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Tarion says, the silver keg mentions a stake through the heart killing more than just vampires. Is that from My Best Friend is a Vampire? A great example of fun, campy 80s flicks. Did we read this already?
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that that your brain was erased by the amount of rage that you felt last week, but yeah, we did do that.
Oh, that's weird. Was there a Thursday show?
I think so.
Wow, I don't remember any of this.
I don't know about your Thursday shows.
Huh. Weird. Blizzbob says, the Knob's Goblin Seltzer will restore a moderate amount of MP when drunk, but how do I get it drunk? Yeah. Sean Clannery asked about birthday present next week, rolling out the new Disco Bandit Trader skill. The Disco Bandit one was the one that we were by far the least satisfied with, and it was just sort of weird unto uselessness. And I think that I came up with at least a more fun version of it, but I gotta do it. I gotta finish it. We've got several more trader items that are ready to go, and I don't know why we like every once in a while, Hot Stuff will say, hey, we should roll a trader item today. And I say, oh, yeah, okay. And then I just don't do it. The one thing that would actually make it happen, we can schedule them arbitrarily far ahead of time, but what we have still not done is made a way to schedule announcements to fire at the end of a particular rollover, which I would use that all the time because I don't like people always get mad on the Twitter, and I don't understand why this keeps happening. Whenever I post an announcement during rollover about something that has come out, then they're like, oh, what the fuck, retard, the game's still down. Because it went out on the Twitter, you know, and like normal, you know, the people who actually log in on to play don't see that announcement until the game is back up. So I think, for the most part, I would use that scheduling thing all the time. Like, post this announcement as soon as rollover's finished on X date, right? Which would allow us to just say, all right, we're scheduling the next 8 traveling trader visits. And then we just know. When they're going to be there. I don't actually know if there are 8 left.
Yeah, that would be the trick. We don't want to set them all and then go, okay, like with the maps. We're going to have 12 of these all ready to go.
Yeah. And
by which I mean we're going to kind of scramble to finish them.
Yeah. Yeah. My goal last week was to get 3 maps done, and I got a map done.
So next time your goal should be to get 9 maps done.
Yeah, I'll try that. I'll try that this week. I keep thinking of more half-baked ideas for maps.
I think my last two were kind of half-assed. Like, only conceptualized instead of, like, here are items and descriptions.
Yeah, that's where the problem comes in, right? Like, because I have a bunch that are like that, too, and those are the ones that it's like... Like, I feel like if you've written a bunch of stuff any day of the week, I can sit down and implement that stuff.
Right.
But if there, if it's like, there needs to be a good idea for this, there needs to be like a hook, then that's something that has to come in a flash of inspiration and is not something that I can just sit down and squeeze out of myself, you know, the way that, say, artwork is.
Right.
And coding. But yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like what's going to happen is that one of these days a little levee is going to break in my head, and then I'm going to sit down and just crank out a bunch of the maps, right? And then, you know, it's good. It makes me, I guess, slightly less satisfied with the work, because, you know, Hot Stuff pointed this out, like, I feel like we haven't done anything this year, and that is because even though there has been a tremendous amount of content, we put a tremendous amount of work into KOL, it's all been scheduled stuff, and so none of the, like, larger things that I want to do that are in my head have had a lot of progress made on them.
Right.
But, you know. The trouble is, we can't avoid this feature creep, right? Like, so many of the maps so far have been way... Like, the whole point of these was that they were supposed to be something that I could implement, that I could do in a day, right? And it's just, we keep setting them up and posting them in there in a way that they end up being more than a day's worth of work.
Yeah.
Which is problematic. And just, like, work that I start and then can't finish, like the guy in Psycho Killer. Stuart says, to go with combat macros, can we get auto rebuff conditions? Something that's triggered after each adventure, like if HP percent is less than 40, spell Cannelloni Cocoon, or if turns left of fat loot is less than 5, or whatever, then MP percent is greater than 80, cast 4 fat loot. It would take a lot of tedium out of running buffs and build on the Jack Man system already there. Love you lots. Well, that I don't know, actually. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be that big. Could you write that in a macro now? I think you can, right? I think you can. Maybe you can't. Maybe a lot of people have wanted us to extend that scripting language to out of combat macros. I mean, I don't know. Would people like a section of their macros that ran after combat? I feel like the ability to run another macro from a macro would be a thing that people would want, because, like, you wouldn't necessarily always be running the same macro in a combat, but you might always want the same thing to run afterwards. Whatever. One thing that I do want to do is, now that we can do more stuff with, like, the right-click menu stuff, without adding additional complexity to the interface, I think that any effect that the game knows where it comes from, I think you should be able to right-click on the effect and get a menu to either use the potion or cast the buff to give you more of a dose of it. Mm. 'Cause that's, you know, that's easy, and it doesn't change the interface at all, and it is a feature that people really like about Grease Monkey and Mafia that I see no reason not to steal from there. Zortex says, with Divines and Love Songs, the monsters in Fernsworthy's Bateman are... Fernsworthy's Bateman. That's Jason and Justine Bateman's cousin.
Right.
Are trivial to defeat. Any plans to add a combat item immune monster down there? You know, it's possible that the basement could use some love. You know, it's possible that a dive, somebody had the idea of once you've done the full telescope, that getting down to that level again should give you an instant karma, maybe, which I kind of like that idea. I don't think anybody would ever do it, you know, but I don't know if anybody ever does it now. There are certainly some things that I've kind of got these ideas for, like, a sort of overall dungeon full of dungeons revamp that, you know, fuck knows if any of this stuff is ever going to happen. You know, it's the kind of, like, every once in a while now, you know, like, I sat down and did all the art for the tavern revamp a couple days ago, and it's like, so that, like, one of these days, I'm going to just do, like, an hour or two long burst, and the tavern revamp is just going to be done and ready to go, right? You know, just keep messing with it. Cool. I've got a mechanic that I want to run by you to see if it's funny enough to do, because it's potentially contentious content-wise. But we'll just tease that on here and not get into it. CloudStrife says, even if I multi-use recordings of Corral of Companions app, it says I only smash one record over my head. I forgot that that's how those work. Spleenmaster says, which donation method do you actually get the most money from, and are you at liberty to share how much you actually receive from the $10 donated by each method? Well, so, with Amazon, I don't know. With postal mail donations, it is difficult to calculate because that requires some of... I mean, regular donations, if something goes wrong, require some of Zly's time. So, like, you know, salary concerns figure into that. With PayPal, if you donate $10, we get $9.41. Mm. And... It's a greater percentage if you donate more, because there's like a lot of what they're taking is a 39-cent minimum per transaction.
Yeah.
The percentage is pretty low, and then we get a lot of it refunded because of volume. I'm like, I called and I said, could you please refund some of this money? And they said, yes, because of the volume.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, with Rixty, I don't know. Hot Stuff knows, because he dealt with all that paperwork. I was kind of surprised. Like, there's been, like, a couple grand in spare change spent on us since we started taking Rixty. You know, I'm always really nervous about anything that might potentially earn money.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And Hot Stuff's contention in this, I think, is probably the truth. Like, that is just money that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that somebody... And so, which is why it's okay that the percentages are higher. Like, the whole cell phone thing, the percentages are retarded. When we talk to a guy that, like, does that professionally for one of the larger outfits that does it, like microtransaction for games, and it is absurd the fees that they take out of it. And, like, that is the thing where I feel like I can definitely imagine somebody doing that instead of using PayPal, because it's more convenient. And because of that, we can't really do it. Like, it would just be, like, we would be adding a little bit of convenience for the users, but just making a decision that cut revenue flat out. But this, yeah, with the coins thing, I mean, I'm actually surprised. Like, you know, I figured either... people would complain that it seemed all sketchy, or no one would ever use it. But it's like, yeah, no. Turns out, get about $1,000 a month worth of spare change. Hmm. The initial enthusiasm might wear off, and that might go down. But it seems kind of cool, you know. I wish that there had been stuff to do. Although, you know, I've always been a guy who didn't feel like it was worth the time to count coins, and so Coinstar machines were like a godsend for me. Now I'm a guy who just keeps all of his change because I like seeing it pile up. And it's never like, I'm never a guy who really wants a pack of cigarettes, but it's the day before payday, so he has to fish out enough nickels to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Right.
That was the kind of guy I was for a long time. What's weird is that I was the kind of guy for whom it was always the day before payday. And I can definitely say that I was a guy who always wanted a pack of cigarettes. But
remember the one time that I actually borrowed money from friends? It was so that I could buy cigarettes and cat food before payday. Good old cigarettes. I miss them.
Nah, you could have just smoked your cat.
I guess that's kind of a one bird, two stones
situation.
Because that's really inefficient.
Like a one cup, two girls.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. Yeah, we have a change jar that was full, and then the wife took all of the pennies out of it and gave them their own jar, which made it 3/4 full. And then we filled it back up, and there was a good $250 in there when we finally cashed it in.
What was the point of taking the pennies out?
So that once it was full, the value in there would be higher.
Huh. But then what would you do with the pennies?
Copper can't mingle with the other metals.
Right, it's a different color, Zach. Now, we, so then put the pennies in their own jar. And when that jar's full, then, you know, years from now when that jar's full, it'll be worth like $3. But
see, I just like the, I like the, when it's time for your kid to get a bank account, it is funded with the contents of the change jar. So,
great.
Now unfortunately, like, 8 years worth of accumulated change walked away from me while I wasn't around. But I'm building it up again, so my future unborn children, they'll have kind of a bank account.
Right.
So, like, the idea of just carrying these giant vases full of change to the bank and just, like, walking in, say, I want to make a deposit, and then just dropping them so that they break and the change goes everywhere in the entire bank.
I think that's one of those things, though, where the camera always cuts away when people do that, and you never see the guy having to pick up every single one of them while the security guard stands there with a gun.
Right. I mean, and it would be fun, except for the broken glass. That's true of almost everything. Sorority parties, they'd be fun, except for the broken glass. Let's see. Evangeon Q says, I still don't like what you've done with the Blender and Possum Moon Signs. I like the feeling of more turns. Any chance for a change fix? For the Possum Moon Signs, scrap the plus five initial adventures and have plus one adventures per fullness used. For the Blender, scrap the plus five and have plus half per drunkenness. So the problem with that is that those, both of those ideas are directly contrary to the goal for this change, which was to, like, even out the application of that stuff and make it sensible. So, like, I don't feel like it makes any sense for somebody who eats, well, no, never mind. I guess with the per fullness thing, it's like fairly straightforward because everybody always eats up to full. The half per drunkenness doesn't make any sense though, because how would you do that, right? Like, you'd always end up wasting some, and so there would be like certain drinks that, Anyway, I don't want to do that. That's not what I want to do. The plus one for fullness is. I guess I don't really get. I did not really understand the impact of the way that that was coded. Like, I'd never looked into it, but, like, when I made this change and people started saying, like, oh, I used to get, like, 10 turns a day, I was like, that's crazy. Like, that is way, way more powerful than these things were ever supposed to be. You know? It's just one of those things where I do shit without thinking about it, and then I let it sit for a long time, and then, you know, people are less resistant to, like, bad design than they are to change. Ares Prejit says, I've always felt there should be a Gandhi trophy for perming all of the passive resistance skills, except it should be spelled correctly as Gandhi. I see, because he misspelled Gandhi the first time.
That's kind of funny. We need more trophies. That's what we need.
Yeah. Any chance for a sword and gun combo using double-fisted skill smashing? It's a classic combo I'm sad to see still doesn't exist in KOL. That was also from a Bandy on Q. Well, there's like sort of math and mechanical reasons on the back end that we can't do it now. I sometimes want to come up with a system whereby that works. But the problem now is that there's only a single roll for attacking. And if it's with a ranged weapon, it rolls against your moxie. And if it's with a melee weapon, it rolls against your muscle. And so what do you roll against if you've got a sword and a gun? I mean, I guess it could do some crazy shit where it rolled to hit or miss based on the average of your muscle and your moxie. But I don't think that people would like that. Doing them both as separate attacks would be awesome. But then the question is, how do you distribute your bonus damage? You could say split it in half across both weapons, but, like, if you've got a sword with plus 10 hot damage and a gun with plus 10 cold damage, you don't want each of them to do 5 cold damage and 5 hot damage. So, like, there has to be some additional state tracking so that the player object knows where the bonuses are coming from. And then, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's plausible, but what it also does is it would break some of the, well, I say some of the, it would break the one, like, puzzle encounter we have that relies on you needing to come up with a whole lot of different sources of damage, because it would effectively double the number of individual sources of damage that you can produce in a single round. Yep. VanGQ asked a ton of questions here. Can you add a chat feature which makes the colors of the names of players in chat who are hardcore slash Ronin come up as a different color? Yeah, that would probably irritate people. And annoy the pig. Why aren't there stainless plexiglass and brimstone outfits? Because I cannot bring myself to draw tattoos. Hot Stuff did all the outfit art for them. You know, we would still need to do, like, Halloween candy and stuff. But there's no good reason other than I'm lazy, and it's been years since that stuff was ready to go.
I guess with stuff like that, like, the longer that it is, the less there is that's in it for us to do it.
Yeah.
Except for, like, people stopping complaining. You know, it's... like, the moment that the game grid went out of the store, it became that much harder to put Jackass Plumber in.
Yeah.
I guess just to prioritize it, to make it something that we actually do with a quickness. So, you know, the longer that it takes, the more inertia just kind of beats us up.
And I have this thing where, like, I don't know what this instinct is, but it's like the more voicemails I have, the less likely I am to listen to them.
Hmm.
Right now, I have 7 voicemails, and a lot of them came in while I was, like, away from my phone over Comic-Con, or, like, just, you know, wasn't answering the phone a lot, and I know that I could listen to them all and just not have to do anything about any of them, but I just dread them, and, like, you know, I get this thing where it's, like, this sort of, like, self-feeding embarrassment cycle. Like, if I haven't talked to somebody for a long time, I don't want to deal with the awkwardness of having to, like, apologize for not talking to them for a long time. And so I just don't call them.
Huh.
You know, it kind of makes it worse. I also used to, like, if I, like, was, you know, a couple times when I was in school and I would, like, be cleaning my locker and find a library book that was, like, a month overdue. And instead of taking it back, because I was just sort of, like, so ashamed of myself, I would, like, just cover it up with something, and then it would end up being 6 months overdue. You know? Like, I don't know what that is, but that's what's making me not do the fucking outfit tattoos for stainless and plexi and brimstone.
You used to, it used to be that I could call you and leave a detailed voicemail, and you would call back and go, "Hey, man, what's up?" And that's when I realized that I shouldn't leave a voicemail at all.
Yeah, I mean, often I feel like if somebody calls me and leaves a voicemail and I saw that happened, like, a minute ago, I feel like, okay, I know he is holding his phone right now, so I should call instead of listening to the voicemail. I think that's where that came up with. But I hate voicemail in general. Like, I know a guy who, and I feel like there are, I've heard of other people doing this, who have just, like, turned off voicemail on their phone, right? Mm. And that's a thing that, to me, would make my cell phone seem a lot less like a chain that was tying me to responsibility. You know, I lament, I mean, this was, for reasons that will be obvious to people who knew me, it was way worse when I was married, but I have always hated the fact that, like, people can get a hold of me. People think they should be able to get a hold of me just no matter what, whenever, right? Whereas, like, 30 years ago, it just wouldn't have been the case. Like, 30 years ago, you just couldn't bother people at work.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not the case anymore because everybody has fucking cell phones. And, like, it amazes me when I'm hanging out with younger people who, like, I don't know, it kind of drives me nuts if I'm sitting at a restaurant with somebody and their cell phone rings and they answer it. And it's like, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the guy that, like, is mad at people or criticizes them for social behavior, right? So I never say anything, but it just kind of drives me nuts. And I feel like it weirds people out. Like, my phone will ring. I will either pull it out of my pocket to see who's calling, or I won't. And if I'm with somebody, like, if my mom calls me in the middle of the day, it's probably there's something wrong, right? So if it was my mom, I would probably answer the phone and say, "Hey, I'm busy. What's up?" And if it was something, if it wasn't important, she'd be like, "Oh, I'll call you back later." But, like, you know, I feel like just not answering my phone causes people, mostly younger people, to feel like, "What are you doing? Are you sure you don't want to answer that?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure that I don't want to answer that." Like, I would say that I answer 5% of my incoming calls.
Do you feel the same way about text messages, though? If you get a text when you're with people, will you see what it is and reply if you need to?
Yeah, sometimes. Which is probably just as obnoxious.
Interesting, interesting.
Although it's not. You know, the thing that I hate, I feel like it is humiliating to sit at a table in a restaurant while somebody else is talking on a phone. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like everybody else in the restaurant is thinking, wow, that person is really rude, and that dude that they're with must be really fucking boring if they're talking on the phone instead of talking to him. Hmm. Which is ridiculous. I know that no one feels that way. But that's just the thing that triggers. Because, like, what do you do? What are you supposed to do when you're sitting there and somebody that is, like, 2 feet from you is talking on the phone to somebody? Right?
You pull out your phone and you start poking it.
Playing video games or something?
Yep.
Yeah, I guess.
That's the Chicago way.
Yeah.
They pull out a phone, you pull out a gun.
There was also some study recently that, like, scientifically proved that listening to one half of a conversation is incredibly annoying.
Yeah, it is.
Like, that listening to an entire conversation, you can readily tune it out, but listening to one side of a conversation, you can't. And so it just keeps digging into your attention.
It's the same, I think it's the same thing as a constant noise or repetitive noise versus unpredictable interval noise. Because right. You never know when the next time, when the person's going to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't.
Anyway, that's my story about the stainless plexi and brimstone tattoos. Nice.
Honestly, though, I'd rather have somebody be on the phone than, like, ask me a question and try to hold a conversation with me while they're poking their phone, like, texting or checking email or shit.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends on the text, right? Like, if I'm at a bar with people and somebody that we're supposed to meet texts me and says, "Hey, are you guys there yet?" I will say, "Oh, let me text Joe, tell him where we're sitting."
Sure.
Right? Like, so there are clearly times when, you know, if it's something that's not important, I will ignore it until the people that I'm with are in the bathroom or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I probably don't actually practice what I preach in that regard. But, looks like a 7 o'clock. You gotta check in, handoff, hand in, check off. Are you ready to hand in your Chekhov report?
I have a Walter Koenig puppet, so I have a hand in Chekhov as we.
You have a hand in Chekhov.
Hey.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
send me the files for this for the show. It turned out to not be that big of a deal once I actually spent 5 minutes actually learning how to use Audacity.
And there will be 2 files instead of 5 this week, so it'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll see you next week, kids.
Bye, everybody.